But this is it. When he sits down, this is it. I'm going on. It was a fine spring day in Bear Country. We're reading the Berenstain Bears. Too much TV. You could be doing homework, but here you are listening to the Berenstain Bears. And the school bus is coming home. Mama Bear was inside the family's treehouse, fixing Brother and Sister Bear's after-school snacks. Brother and Sister Bear got off the school bus and came into the kitchen with hardly a hello. Now, please don't be hyper about any noise you make, okay? Then they did what they did every day. They took their milk and cookies into the living room and switched on the TV. There's no question about it, thought Mama. The cubs are watching too much TV. Later, when Papa Bear came in from his shop and joined Brother and Sister, Mama became even more convinced. There's absolutely no question about it. The whole Bear family is watching too much TV. She wasn't quite sure how it had happened. Maybe it began when the old fuzzy-pictured black-and-white set broke down and they got a big new color set. Or maybe it started when Papa put up a big antenna up on top of the treehouse and brought in pictures from all over Bear Country. But however it had happened, one thing was sure. The Bear family was spending more and more time watching television and less time with all the other things they might be doing instead. The Bear family had always had lively conversations around the dinner table. But not lately. Lately, they just sit around and chewed. The cubs had all kinds of fun playing outdoors, but not anymore. They were too busy watching Nutty Bear and the Bear Stooges. That evening after dinner, when Brother and Sister scampered in to turn on the TV, Mama stopped them and said her piece. We've been watching altogether too much television around here. But Mama, said Brother, Nutty Bear is coming on, and we'll miss it. And the Bear Stooges. Bear Stooges, added Sister. Well, you'll just have to miss them, said Mama firmly. And furthermore, she added, you may as well get used to the idea, because there's not going to be any television around here for a whole week. No TV for a week, said the shocked cubs. But Mama. Never mind the bus, said Papa. Your mother is absolutely right. There's a lot more to life than TV, like homework, for instance, and fresh air and sunshine and exercise. No TV for a week is an excellent idea. Now, if you'll excuse me, there's a sports show I want to watch. Just a minute, Papa, said Mama. No TV for a week means you too. What, said Papa? You can't be serious. But Mama was very serious. What about the news, protested Papa. I won't know what's going on in the world if I don't watch the TV news. Here, try this, said Mama. It's called the newspaper. And the weather, continued Papa. How will we know what the weather will be? Try this, said Mama. It's called putting your hand out the window to see if it's raining. Well, what are we supposed to do? Just sit around and talk, said Brother. Well, that'll be fine for starters, said Mama, settling comfortably into her rocker. But it had been so long since the Bear family sat around and talked that they had sort of forgotten how. It really didn't matter because pretty soon Papa fell asleep and snored so loudly that they wouldn't have heard each other anyway. After school the next day, the cubs looked longingly at the TV, but Mama shooed them out to play. Brother's bike had a tire that needed pumping up, and Sister's trike needed a little oil. And while it seemed strange not watching television, it was fun riding bikes and trikes again, sort of. That evening, the cubs worked on their homework, but it wasn't easy with that blank TV just sitting there, staring. Then Sister noticed an ad in Papa's newspaper, an ad for a TV special. Oh, Mama, she said, look, a special. No TV for a week means no TV for a week, answered Mama. And besides, Mother Nature has a much bigger special waiting for us. We're going to sit outside and watch the stars come out. Watch the stars come out, complained Sister. I don't know if I can stand the excitement, said Brother. But as they sat under the great sky, they all came over the bears. It was all so big and beautiful. The bears stared at the sky. So far, not a single star. Look, cried Sister, something's flying. That, said Papa, out to their breakfast of insects. Breakfast, asked Brother. That's right, answered Papa. Bats sleep during the day, so this is their breakfast time. I see a star, cried Sister. She had found the first tiny star. Soon there were others, and after a while, the whole sky was full of stars. And it was very special, more special than anything they'd ever seen on TV. It was a sharper picture, too, and a much, much, much bigger screen. The Bear family did all sorts of interesting things over the next few days, so interesting that they hardly even thought about TV. They went on a nature walk and watched tadpoles hatch out eggs. They watched an orb large spider in a magnificent web. They even went shopping at the Bear Country Mall to serve you some of her savings to buy a knitting spool and some yarn.
Rather, buy a cube puzzle.
They did have to keep an eye on Papa, though. While they were at the mall, the Cubs saw Papa in the TV store sneaking a look at some game shows. Another time, he went downstairs in the middle of the night for a peek at the late day movie. But Mama and the Cubs stopped him just in time. The next evening, it was the last day of their no-TV week, the Bear family was having a lively conversation at the dinner table. They all agreed that the week had been a success, but Brother had a question. Mama, he asked, what is it you don't like about TV? What do you have against it? Goodness, said Mama, I don't have anything against TV. I like it. What I'm against is the TV habit. Sitting in front of it day after day, like old stumps waiting for a dry rot to set in. Well, said Brother, tomorrow I'm going to get a whole bunch of snacks and watch TV all day. Me too, said Sister. Me too, said Papa. But the only one who did watch it all day was Papa. Brother got interested in his cube puzzle, and he finally solved it. Sister started digging a rug under her knitting spool. Finally, even Papa had enough and decided to bait his hook for a couple of those leaping traps. All right, Berenstain Bears. If you'd like to read through this later, can I? Right. Too much TV. The reason I read that first is, well, first of all, because it fits in so well. It hurt the question, what is it that you have against TV? She says, I'm not against TV. It's the TV habit. That's very good. I would go a little stronger. I'm semi-against TV, but she's much nicer than I am. Okay, let me just say a few preliminary things before I get into the body, more the meat. First of all, I hope you got the idea from that story I read, but I'm not going to say if you have a TV, if you watch a TV, if you have kids and let them watch TV, that you're some sort of a lousy, stupid, sinner, crummy person. In fact, if I were to say that or even imply it, I would be the lousy, crummy, stupid person. All right? I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying you should throw your TV out. Although, if you were to leave tonight and decide not to watch TV, I would feel good about that. But I'm not saying go throw your TV out. It's horrible. What am I saying? Here's my thesis. I'm just going to lay it all out for you. Here's what I'm going to try to demonstrate this evening. The TV is a drug. Not like a drug, but a drug. Literal. TV is a drug. And as a drug, needs to be used with care. For instance, you wouldn't give your child, nor would I give my child, a bottle of medicine and a spoon and say, go administer it to yourself. Or, I like a beer with supper. I wouldn't say to my 4.5-year-old, go to the refrigerator, there's plenty of beer, have a few cans, have a six-pack, I don't care, help yourself. No, I give him a sip of mine. Maybe water some down in a little glass and let him drink that. I control it. Now, the thesis, the TV is a drug. Let me just make a couple comments on that major thesis. First, TV has permeated society. No way around it. 4 million TVs sold in 1950. That's the beginning of the TV boom, if you want to call it that. And by 1970, it was estimated that 96% of Americans owned a television or in homes, at least one television. And by now, I'm sure the figure is up to 99 point something. And that has a big big implications for child raising, for any sort of parenting, for being a pastor, or working with people in any way, that television and its influence. Okay, so, see, it's not bad. TV is not bad, but we have this drug, see, that has permeated society. Now, research and interviews with many, many, many people are beginning to demonstrate and show that this drug, which has permeated our society, is causing some damaging effects on people, on children, on development. All right? We'll point out a few of those facts and figures for you a little bit later. Again, I'm not saying just because you own a TV and watch it occasionally, I'm not saying that you're bad or wrong, or you're going to contribute to the delinquency of your kids. But I'm saying that TV use and TV use in our society has caused, or at least, there are some very strong indicators that it is causing some serious problems that have ramifications for pastors, parents, whatever, teachers. All right, here's an underlying assumption. Very important. If you leave with nothing else, I want you to leave with this tonight. It's not what you watch on TV that's so significant. It's that you watch. It's not the content of television programs. It's the nature of the medium itself. Now, we've heard lots of things about the content of TV. For instance, sitcoms and little dramas teach our kids that problems can be solved in 30 minutes. And commercials. Commercials engender materialism and consumerism, and they're sort of half-truth, half-lie, and that's bad. The content of commercials are bad. And violence. They see all this violence, they see all these killings, all this shooting, and they become callous. Well, all right. Some studies have been done on all those. And the studies point that there's some truth to those statements. And you could just look at those statements alone and say, I don't want TV in my life, or I don't want a part of it. But for the sake of this talk tonight, those are unnecessary. We don't even need those things. That's the least. Those are the most minute problems with television. The things that I've mentioned, violence, sex, the commercials, and the rest. And there are many studies on this. That's the trouble. Whenever people talk about television, they always talk about the content. You very seldom hear what I'm going to be sharing with you this evening. Now, I have a couple of unscholarly things to admit to you. Very embarrassing, but no, it's not embarrassing. First of all, I have very few sources, very narrow sources, simply because there are very few people who have studied the television as a medium and its effects, as in other words, just the watching of TV. I have for you up here, which you can come up and get, some copies of my bibliography, beginning bibliography. Lots of books. I've read several of them, but none of them really touch the issue like the one book I will be relying on almost entirely. Two books, actually, I'll be relying on. This is one of them. That's why I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. Somebody else, see, that was the point. They didn't even talk about the content, you know? Probably were good family shows that they were watching, see? But it was talking about something else. I hope you heard. The book I'll be relying on heavily is a book I highly recommend. I cannot recommend it enough. Marie Wynn, The Plug-In Drug. She's a child development specialist. Play, it's her real area. Children's play. Written many books for children about playing with children and so forth, for adults and kids. But The Plug-In Drug, you can see by her title what her emphasis is and what my emphasis has become. So this is largely so. That's narrow sources. I'm not using a vast amount of stuff because there isn't a vast amount of stuff. Secondly, this is going to be very biased. I'm not going to give you both sides of the story. I'll give you two reasons why. I wonder if you all got this in the mail. Everybody see this advertisement for cable TV? The implication is, if you don't have cable TV, you are a dumb country bumpkin. Hey, I don't need TV. I don't need cable. Can you imagine what sort of a person would be pictured here if he didn't even own a TV? They probably have a picture of a caveman. Really, that's the assumption. And I've even read that term, you know, how you say you're living like a cultural, you know, prehistoric person or something. So the point is, this is going to be a biased presentation because our society bombards us with a pro-TV opinion, you know? It's good to have. It keeps you informed. The kids will learn a lot. It broadens horizons. Oh, let them watch Sesame Street. They'll get letter recognition much faster, which is true. We'll talk about Sesame Street in a minute. Anyway, the pro-TV opinion is very pervasive. What I'm going to say is very minute, and so that's why I'm going to be boldly biased. By the way, interrupt anytime with questions, objections, attacks, nice attacks. Whatever. All right, this is not a real formal, strict kind of thing. If you have questions, please challenge me and make me answer them. Okay? All right, I think that's it. Oh, one more thing. I made a decision today. I hope it's a good decision. I decided not to give you my Bible starting point, my Bible basis. You think, how can you give a talk without a Bible basis? Because I think the sociological basis for what I'm about to say is strong enough. However, when I'm finished, I'm prepared to share with you biblically why I feel television is a hindrance to God's goals for family and for child development and for people in general. Okay, I'll share that with you later. But that's more accessible to you than the sociological information. Okay, first thing I'd like to show is that television is a drug. not like a drug for you two who just came in, but my main thesis is that TV is a drug, literal, and that as a drug it needs to be used carefully and controlled and mediated. That's the word I love. Parents, mediate television for your children. That's the term. Okay. There are several. Marie Wynne, in her book, conducted many, many interviews, hundreds of interviews, with people of different, well, mostly middle-class people, but from different areas, rural, urban, suburban, East Coast, and mostly New York area, and also in Denver. So it's a fairly wide spread, fairly wide, her interviews. As she interviewed parents and people who observed TV watchers, particularly their children, but also adults, that's another thing, one more thing. This is aimed primarily at children and family and child development. However, I could give you a pretty good argument why adults should limit their watching too. But let me step back a second. When I said it was a drug, another example is alcohol. Remember the beer at the table thing? You're not going to have your five-year-old go drink a six-pack of beer, but maybe you give them a sip. See? Let me see. Okay. I'm up. Okay, let me go back. Change. Okay, let me just talk about how it's a drug. All right? Okay. A changed state of consciousness. First step. Parents who observe their children watch TV notice something. The kids are not asleep. They're awake, but they're not. Their breathing is different. Their eyes become slightly glazed, slightly dilated. Several physical signs, Marie Wynne believes, that that is an actual changed state of consciousness. It's not an awake, it's not an asleep, but it's a trance. And as you look through the interviews, you see words like mesmerized and trance-like and sedated. Words like that appear a lot. So television produces a change, our long-term watching produces a changed state of consciousness. Okay? Second one, shutdown mechanism. A test was done where a lot of newborn babies were laid out, see? And a bright light was flashed, very bright, and then turned off. And wait a little bit, and turned on, bright. Anyway, they kept doing that, cycles, over and over again. And finally, the kids went into sort of a trance. They call it a shutdown mechanism. In other words, when there's too much stimulus, there's too much for a little person to take in, they're designed with something inside them that just kind of doesn't put them to sleep, although little babies, have you ever seen a little baby asleep in a roaring crowd? Have you ever seen that? That's part of the shutdown mechanism. But often it doesn't do that. It just kind of puts them, whatever, and shuts them down. Too much coming in. The nature of television is very much like bright light. It's concentrated. See, so we look and we see a whole field of vision. With TV, it's very concentrated. You have the whole thing right there in a little place. It's bright, and it's constantly moving, and it's fast, and the dialogue comes only once. And so many of the interviews with people who observe children watching television, I see these kids watching TV here, that's why I pointed, are descriptions of this shutdown mechanism. All right? Reentry syndrome. So many of the mothers said, boy, you turn off the television and my child is unmanageable. He climbs the walls. He's terrible. He gets on them. My kids fight. And after a while, they're okay. That came up in interviews too many times. The question is there some, so it's like waking up. And some people wake up just like that. But other people need a bit of time to reorient themselves and to kind of have a cup of coffee or whatever to get them back in. Also, with drugs and alcohol, you don't just snap out, but you re-enter, see? Re-entry syndrome, very much like what would be with a drug, with alcohol, has been seen with children. And this is a lot of TV watching. We're not talking maybe a half hour, but continuous, or, a few hours of regular watching. Addiction. Oh, passivity, that's another one. Television, and this is a very important concept, and something else connected with drugs. A drug or alcohol is something that you take and you receive a high, a good feeling, and you just kind of get it, It's not like you go out and dig in your garden and you feel kind of a high, invigorated, or you're a runner and you pass a certain point and you're actively getting that high, But a drug and alcohol sort of thing gives you a high, you know, something that you don't normally get. This passivity, this high passivity, this passivity is something demonstrated with TV. You don't do anything. You just sit there and take it in. What I'm trying to do is build each step, stepping stones, to show how the TV experience is like a drug, alcohol experience. Several other things that came up in the interviews, like blots out reality, distorts time. Ever watch TV for 2 hours and say, where'd the time, it's strange, where'd the time go? It's, you know, distorts time. Unable to turn it off. I'm going to read a couple of things in just a minute that show how people, after sustained watching, aren't able to turn it off. Here's a book called Loosening the Grip. It's about alcohol. I had it in my alcoholism class, which is an excellent class taught by Knippel, a little advertisement. Let me just read some definitions of alcoholism by various authorities. An early pioneer in alcohol study said, alcoholism is any use of alcoholic beverages that causes any damage to the individual or to society or both. Another authority, editor of the Journal of Studies in Alcohol, alcoholism is a chronic disease manifested by repeated implicative drinking so as to cause injury to the drinker's health or to his social or economic functioning. Alcoholics Anonymous has a doctor friend, or a doctor who has been a friend of the founding fathers of that group, and he said, the obsession or compulsion of drinking guarantees that the sufferer will drink against his own will and interest. The World Health Organization defined alcoholism as any form of drinking which in extent goes beyond the traditional and customary dietary use. You begin to see a trend here, a pattern out of control. You want to stop but maybe can't. It impairs your functioning. You're not totally alert or with it. Socially, it affects economic functioning, alcoholism. The writers of this book have a good one. Alcoholism is a disease in which a person's use of alcohol continues despite problems it causes in any area of life. Okay, let's think about those for a minute. Marie Wynne, in her book, defines addiction, and here's what she said, what I mentioned before, the search for a high apart from normal life, the need of a substance for normal functioning. In other words, you don't feel quite right unless you had a beer or two before. All right? And the reason, I'll tell you why I'm going through this in just a second. Repeated experience, you know, one bout of drinking or one whatever is not enough. You need to do it over and over. You need to do it regularly. A distortion of life and its pleasures. In other words, the normal pleasures of life are distorted. It's not reality. It's not present for someone who's high on drugs or who is drunk with alcohol. All right? And then destructive elements. It brings destruction into relationships, into thinking, into working. Time and time again, interviews with people who watch a lot of TV and people who are ex-heavy TV watchers bring these things out. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable when you read these testimonials of ex-heavy TV watchers, how they match the definitions and how they match this, the experiences of alcoholics and of substance-abusing people. In other words, the more you read, the more I have read, there's an amazing correlation between the alcohol drug experience and the TV experience. So I'm not saying you go and watch a half hour of news, that's going to happen. And we're talking a little more extensive. However, I'm not an alcoholic, but I like to drink a beer. I like to drink a glass of wine. See, it's the same substance. I'm using it in a controlled way. An alcoholic uses it in an uncontrolled way. Maybe a half hour of television or a couple hours on the weekend, in a controlled way. The way that most of America watches, by released research, the latest 1983 Surgeon General's report, I don't even know the figure. I mean, I forget, 20, 30, 40 hours a week average for, you know, little children, 3 to 5. And 6 to 9 is even a little more. See? So the way most Americans watch TV corresponds to a heavy use of a drug. Let me read a few addiction things. I watch TV as an adult. I watch TV the way an alcoholic drinks. If I come home and sit in front of the TV, I'll watch any program at all, even if there's nothing on that especially appeals to me. Then the next thing I know, it's 11 o'clock, and I'm watching the Johnny Carson show, and I'll realize I've spent the whole evening watching TV. What's more, I can't stand Johnny Carson, but I'll still sit there watching him. I'm addicted to TV.
When it's there, I'm not happy about the addiction. I'll sit there getting madder and madder at myself for watching, but still I sit there. I can't turn it off. See, TV compels you to watch it. Say, no, come on, I have control. Well, you do have control, but the nature of it is, if it's there and on, I mean, if you're going to watch TV, you need to, it gets you. You can only, to experience TV, you can only look. Did you understand what I'm saying? Does this make sense at all about this? It compels you to watch. You must watch it, or else it doesn't matter. It's compelling. Okay, let me read one more. We used to have very bad reception before we got on cable TV. I'd come into the room and see my 8-year-old watching this terrible blurry picture. And I'd say, heavens, how can you see? Let me try to fix it. And he'd get frantic and scream, don't touch it. It really worried me that he wanted to watch so badly and that he was even willing to watch a completely blurred image. So, in other words, let's go back for a second. To say that we need to change the content of the TV is like saying, let's give an alcohol Chivas Regal, you know? Instead of cheap whiskey. See, that's kind of the problem with just looking at the content, not the content. You see? Okay. Let me see. Okay, are there any questions at this point? As you read this and look at other things, as I have done that, I'm becoming more and more, convinced of the drug-like nature and the drug nature of television and how it is a drug. Are there any questions, any problems, any challenges about that point? Yeah, and so many of the interviews were like that. So many of these, you know, I can't read them all. I can't sit and read all these testimonials and things from people, but that's over and over again, over and over again. It's the same thing, you know, just what you were saying, what I was saying.
Kind of like what she just said, and what she said about it requiring her attention.
Mm-hmm.
I think my level of TV watching goes up according to the stress I'm under. I tend to use it as an escape, and it's totally passive, yet it's kind of active because it's all going on.
Passive for you.
Yeah. But it's a nice way to escape because you're focused on it.
Okay. Okay, good. Yeah. Okay, good. All right, I'll go to the next step. Verbal skills. Now, TV has affected verbal skills. Television is primarily a nonverbal experience. That may surprise you. Say, no, it's full of words. It talks all the time. Why? How do I say it's a nonverbal experience? First of all, it goes fast. Which is not, doesn't by itself make it a nonverbal experience. Oh, let me go back. Boy, are you keeping up with this? I'm sorry, my mind just goes. Just because TV is an escape doesn't mean that we should throw it out the window necessarily. There are some days when I feel tense, boy, I'd like to have a beer. You know? Oh, this life is getting tough. We said 2 weeks ago, let's go camping, and we did, and we came back refreshed. Now, a camping experience and a drug experience are different, but we're not saying that an escape, per se, or that recreation, per se, or that pleasure, per se, is wrong. We're saying that uncontrolled use or uncontrolled escape, whether with alcohol or with television or with drugs or with camping, I suppose if you're an obsessive camper, that would come into that category too. That's where it becomes bad. And that the nature of TV is such, and the nature of alcohol is such, and the nature of drugs are such, that there's a line where, at what point, oops, is it too much? Can you stop watch? Could you stop watch? Could you be like the Berenstain Bears and stop watching for a week? Oh, sure I could. Well, do it. See, so we're not saying escape is bad or pleasure is bad. We're saying that the tendency, the TV habit, as Mama Berenstain Bear said. You missed a great story at the beginning. I'll let you read through it. It's just Berenstain Bears, no more, no, too much TV. All right. You feel bad probably now you missed that, I'm sorry. Okay, verbal skills. It's a nonverbal experience, and it lowers the commitment to verbal communication, according to Marie Wynn. Okay, it goes very fast. There's no interaction. You don't interact with TV. You don't talk back to it. You don't get practice, and that's especially important. Even just watching a half-hour program or just sitting and enjoying it, that's not significant. But if you're a child, developing child, see, you're not getting the practice of talking, especially talking with adults, that you need. You're not getting it. Instead, you're just hearing TV talk. And there are cases of social workers who have run across these abused children, and really, the way they were abused is that they would just plop in front of the TV, and they, you know, TV from morning to night. And these children are illiterate, except they could talk TV talk. Briefly, this is the second edition. The 77 edition, she hasn't talked about it at all, of course. This is the 85 edition, and all she says about VCRs is, with VCRs, the amount of TV watching has gone up. So, yeah, she doesn't give any facts or figures about that. That's more of a sort of introductory tone setter kind of statement. Let me get to family life in just a minute and babysitting. Verbal skills, no practice interaction. The components of what you see on TV are not understood, you know? So when we talk and use words, or when we read and see words, we understand words. We see letters, right? Am I being upstage? We see letters. We understand the building blocks. When we see TV, when a kid sees TV, especially, it's magic. I don't understand the building blocks of production and broadcasting and how did this picture get on this box. See? All these things combine to make it a very nonverbal experience. Also, what do children really understand? They did several tests. Showed a nursery rhyme or a fairy tale kind of thing, 20 minutes, to a 4-year-old, 7-year-old, and 10-year-old. The 4-year-olds, when they were tested at the end, understood little of it. And there are several testimonials or several interviews that show that kids, as a father and a kid watching something about the labor situation in Wales, and the father said, "Do you want me to explain this to you?" And the child said, "No, Dad, I'm just watching." See, nonverbal. It's not a verbal experience. He's just watching. 7-year-olds, 10-year-olds understood a little bit more. A group of kids had an adult explain what was going on TV, and they understood the best. All right. All right, let me see. Okay, school. In her 85 edition of the book, she had a whole new chapter about school. SAT scores. Very fascinating. We hear in the news, going down, going down, going down. When did they start going down? In 1965. Why is 1965 significant? That is the year that people who were 3 years old in 1950, remember 1950, 4 million TVs sold? That was the year, that 1950, the 3-year-olds would have been 3 years old in 1950, 1965, those kids would have been taking their college boards, would have been taking the SATs, see? She predicted in her 77 edition that in the early 80s, early to middle 80s, that we'd see a bottoming out. And sure enough, we have. Because 1970, when we had reached saturation point of television, see, now everybody has it, that when those kids took their SATs in 83, 84, it had bottomed out. In other words, the TV had grown. Do you understand that point? It's very significant. She was extremely astute, if you read the two editions, to see her prediction in the 77 and to see that, yes, indeed, SAT scores are going down. TV, you know, boy, Sesame Street's great. A verbal recognition or the letter recognition. That's about all you get. And there are many people who have studied Sesame Street who wonder if, they said, oh boy, with Sesame Street, we're really going to have to upgrade the early curricula. See, first and second grade, they haven't had to do that. The early curricula in schools has not had to be upgraded at all.
little chance to respond. I've mentioned that before. And reflect on what's going on. You can't say stop. Wait, so when we're talking, see? Wait a minute. Could you say that again? Let's see. That's a verbal experience. Talking. Like what TV does. See, you can stop me if you want. This is sort of verbal. This is verbal. But TV, you can't stop. It just goes on and on, marches ever forward. Also, educators. Well, okay, I'm not going to mention that. Let me tell you some studies. A Canadian study was done early on in television, all right, when television was early. There was one town with no TVs, one town with one station, and another town with multi-stations, all right? Very few studies were done like this. Why didn't people study this when TV first came out in the 50s? Why did we could have had a wealth of information. No, TV was too wonderful of a thing. It was great. Nobody ever thought to do this kind of test, but a few were done. And as you can guess with the results of the test, as these kids were tested for verbal and math various skills, the no TV kids obviously scored higher. The one station kids scored higher than the multi kids. You see, that's how it went. And then when the kids with no TV got TV, then they went down to the level of the others. Another one, sixth graders. One group of sixth graders who had TV constantly on, another group of sixth graders who had it on less than constantly. Kids with less than constantly, their especially their verbal scores and cognitive type things scored higher on tests. Preschool kids, a group of preschool kids who watch very, very little TV, and a group of preschool kids who watch a lot of TV. What can you guess about their test scores in math and reading, our math and verbal things, when they got into first grade? Obviously. But Marie Wynne will even say, even with all this, this is not, you can't, this is not hard scientific fact, like, you know, pour two chemicals together and you get a hard scientific, see? But the bulk, the weight of all this material, as you see, little by all the interviews, these studies, and as you read more of what she says, it all points in a spooky direction. All right, I'm going to have time to read a couple of things, so I'm going to move on from school and verbal skills. Play is another area. Play is the work of children. That's where they rehearse adult roles, where they learn how to interact, how to give, how to take. Sometimes it doesn't seem very serious, but it's a deadly serious business. TV has affected children's play, according to not only parents who observed children and were interviewed, but the teachers who taught, and they're a diminishing breed, but teachers who taught both before TV and after TV and were able to make comparisons. TV not only affected the amount of playtime, obviously, and that's one thing the Berenstain Bear book brought out, is that instead of playing, they were watching TV. So TV cuts into playtime. And many parents are asked, if there were no TV in your house, what would your children be doing? Playing. It also affects the nature of play. These teachers who were interviewed, these older teachers, primary teachers, how is it different? Well, before TV, children, you would give them a game or a task, and they would dive in, and they would make it interesting. Now, kids need to be shown that something is interesting, and you have to sell the game to them. But they're stupid or dumb, it's just that they need to be more entertained, or they need to show, they need to know that this is going to be interesting. You know, it's easy for them to get bored. Studies were done in play deprivation with monkeys. So you have a group of monkeys. And if you people who have studied monkeys have seen there's definite things that they do to socialize and to play. The babies do certain sorts of things, from beginning to grasp and reach, and then they run away from their moms a little bit and run back, and they have chasing tag type games. And you can watch, if you watch monkeys enough, which I don't, but some people who do say you can see specific definite games that they play. One group of monkeys were allowed to develop normally and play. Another group of baby monkeys, they were taken away. They were isolated, had no chance to play and interact. After 6 months, they were put back together. And those play-deprived monkeys were they acted out, they bit, and were... They didn't use the term violent. I forget the actual word, but they attacked. You know, they had not learned the restraint, the control. I'm not saying that a kid who watches TV, instead of playing, is going to be violent. That's not the point. The point is that play deprivation makes a difference. It's a problem.
I really suggest you read this book. There's so much information here. I feel bad. I'm not giving you a lot. I'm just giving you the high points. Family. Television and family. Oh, one more thing. Free time in terms of play. What did parents used to do? Did you have a question?
Yeah, I'll like to answer.
Free time. She is, Marie Wynne is so big on free time. There's no more free time. Children have no more free time, by and large. It's filled to the brim. And there are other books and studies. What is it, The Hurried Child? Is that the book? All right, that whole book is about that subject. But there's no more free time. In the past, children, you know, so if you're a mother, see, and no TV, what do mothers do without TV? Well, you get started. Here's some paper, here's some glue, some paste, here's some scissors. Oh, can you cut out and make collages? One thing that my son can say that just makes me really angry, and not curse words, I haven't heard those yet, I know I will, but, and I don't like you, mean words to other people, those would make me angry, and the next in line is, oh, Daddy, entertain me, I need to be entertained, I'm bored. He's learning that statement will quickly get under my skin, I mean, entertain me, entertain yourself. So that's what mothers did in the past, you know, they set them up, they got them started, got them going. Nap time, you know, she ties the whole few pages about nap time, put the kids to bed and they need to sleep. But then what happens to 3-4-year-olds? They don't need to sleep all day, they don't need to sleep in the afternoon. It's an unstructured free time, you know, there's lots of things available, a little record player, a little this and that, and the child, it entertains himself in the past. Not so much anymore. What do you do with your free time? Watch TV. All right. Family life. Well, the Berenstain Bears book entertained a lot, sort of a lot about family life. I'm sorry, yes.
Okay, a lot of the stuff you're talking about with TV, I'm sure if you look back to the early 1900s, when movies were just starting, you would see some of the same stuff. And in the 20s, radio started. So it's not, I don't see it as necessarily TV. A new medium coming in. I mean, TV, granted, is more because it's in your home and you don't have to go see it. But still, like, you know, kids, we're going to spend it all Saturday in movies because there's something to watch.
Yeah. You're right to a point. You're right. It's another medium. And that's a danger. You know, when people started printing, terrible printing. We should have, you know, and people started writing things down. The scholars said, no, no, we should memorize and do it the old way. You know, so that's a danger. I recognize it, and I'm struggling. I struggle through that. Do I have a right to say, oh, this medium is different. There's something different happening here. And I would suggest, just a second, I would suggest that this is different. It's similar. You're right. They're both entertaining type things. But the radio you mentioned and the earlier on movies, one thing you said yourself is that TV is so readily available that doesn't sound like much of a difference, but these darn statistics and interviews and SAT scores across the nation and studies are showing that something's different. Something's happening. And she will admit, Marie Wynne will admit, there could be a lot of different influences, but she believes that a major influence really is TV. Though it is entertaining, just like those other things you mentioned, it is unique in its entertainment value. And I would say as the technology of TV, you know, improves, and the picture and the quality and all the tricks, not tricks in the bad way, but, you know, tricks of the trade, you know, it's a little different than radio, where radio, so Garrison Keillor will talk about that, you know.
where radio, you still have to use your mind and picture. You know, you're not given a picture. It's sort of passive, but it's less passive. And movies, you know, you sort of step back, and again, you have less of a technology. And so I agree with you to say it's a similar medium, but it's unique in its pervasiveness and its quality. Is that fine at all? A little bit? Maybe not. Okay.
I find that.
Again, a couple of things that come to mind. We're not saying TV per se is bad. There are some good uses for it. And if you are amazingly able to have it on and not be compelled to watch it, well, you know, then it is just so much noise, like living on a noisy street, and like it's better than silence. And I had a grandmother who, you know, before she died, lived in a big house by herself, and what she did, she watched a lot of TV. I would disagree if you use the term interact, and maybe we want to see what great you put with that, but see, the nature of TV is not to interact with it. I mean, depends on what you mean by interact. You know, maybe
react.
Yeah, react maybe. Yeah, it's a much more complex problem. Obviously, you know, there's no easy answers. I don't have any easy answers. So my grandma, shame she didn't live with other family members or have little kids to take care of. You know, as it would have been 100 years ago. See, you know, that's what do you do with children and grandparents? You know, you don't put them in front of TV like what we do today. But you put them together, at least that's what they did. Family life. Somebody mentioned family. Dominate schedules. Oh, quick. I've got to watch TV. Oh, I got a program at 6:30. Hurry up with supper. I'll read a testimonial in just a second. Squelch is talking. You can have intelligent people, highly educated. You know, most of us here, I'd say, are highly educated, intelligent people. We could be sitting and talking about theology or whatever, you know, sex, great stuff. And turn on TV, and I've experienced it before, the talking will stop because the TV is being watched and the Berenstain book. I couldn't believe this Berenstain Bears book. It brought up all these points, you know, it's amazing to me. All right, adds noise. Well, maybe that's not so bad. I think it's bad, but maybe not so much. Demands loyalty, I mentioned that. Parenting methods have changed. Here's a great quote. I can't get to it real quick, but the basic thing is, so the Southern mothers who said, I can't prepare supper. I couldn't prepare supper without Mr. Rogers. I wouldn't know how to handle it. If, you see, part of a trend, part of this passivity trend, and this is more my thinking than her thinking, we have a generation of parents now who I believe are more and more less and less confident in their own authority, you see, and they're giving authority to others. And I think part of it is because of TV. So, no longer are parents socializing children, not completely, but socializing children and training them not to bother mom when she's on the phone, to go and entertain themselves while she fixes the supper, to, you know, to go play outside this afternoon. With, you know, we're not doing that anymore, but we're depending on something else, something beyond, something further, something more. We're passively depending on something else. To me, that's one way that TV is affecting adults in their raising of children. Let me just read a few experiments here. So what's the solution? When I presented this to my marriage and family class, the first solution I said is get rid of your TV. And a person who I highly respect, a classmate that I just have great esteem for, said, when you said that, I turned you off. So
So I'm not going to put that first on the list tonight, so you don't turn me off. And that's not the only solution. I don't believe that's the only solution. We do not own a television. That's our choice, and, you know, but that's not the right choice, the only, you know, choice. There are several. Let me read. This is an experiment. If you need to leave, it's fine. Okay, there's time for this. This is a young black policeman in New York was taking some sociology classes at Brooklyn College, and there's a class they had to do some sort of a test for, you know, some sort of a experiment. And so he used his family and experimented with TV to see what it would be like to get rid of it for 2 weeks. And he talks about his, you know, they made $20,000 a year and various things, you know, suburban, typical suburban family. And he found out how much there's a TV in the kids' room and a TV in the parents' room, all right? Children's TV was on 41 hours a week, and the parents' television was on 18 hours. All right, so at the beginning, he incapacitated the TV. Didn't tell him, pulled out the fuse of one and did something to know so they couldn't function. All right? The first day of the experiment showed no real effects of the loss of television from the household. My wife went about her daily routine, and the children spent much of the day playing in the backyard. It was that night when I noticed the first effect of not having a television set working. It was now too dark to send the children out to play, and my wife found it quite impossible to do her evening work with children in her way. By the way, the kids were 6 and 5, all right? This resulted in the children retiring early. This was a solution to the first problem because the greater one. Parents, can you guess the greater problem? The very next day, the children woke up at 6:30 in the morning. When the television is working, the children turn it on about 7 a.m. Each day, the television would perform the duties of a babysitter. From the time the children woke up until the time my wife got up from bed. The children constantly annoyed my wife until she got up and made breakfast. My oldest son was off from school because of the Easter holiday. What caused a major problem that day was the rain. By 12 o'clock, my wife left the house to visit a neighbor and watch the stories that come on television each afternoon. As the day progressed, each member of the family became more and more annoyed over small things. Now you're saying, boy, this is a great experiment. The family's falling apart. Remember what I said? What happens when you go off of a drug? Withdrawal, reentry syndrome. This is withdrawal, is what they're going through here. All right, and I don't just say that for this. Every experiment you read like this starts the same way, irritable, angry, you know, the first few days, first week. Let me go on. Each day thereafter became more and more routine. The children spent a great deal of time doing creative things that their mother planned for them each day, learning to write their alphabet, cutting out the letters, and drawing on their blackboard. The puzzles came from out of the closet and other toys that the children never had the particular interest to play with before soon took up much of their day. I could begin to see where the children spent more time doing things which would be of importance to them in their schoolwork in the future. The amount of time that my wife now spent actively with the children increased considerably. Also, she now did a lot more tasks around the home. The closets of stored old clothes and other useless things were cleaned out. The guest room that had not been used for over 3 months got a thorough cleaning. She used to make her own clothes and sewed very well. With nothing to do in the evening, she started to sew again. By the middle of the second week of the experiment, she had completed a dress and started another one. As a participant observer in the experiment, I found myself becoming completely bored at times. And like the rest of the family, I made certain changes and talks about how he did more of his work. During the experiment, I noted a positive effect on our sex life. I attributed to the early hours that we kept and the amount of rest we received each day. In the past, we went to bed after the 11 o'clock news, or one of us would watch the late show or some other show that would keep us apart. It affects every area of your life, doesn't it? So, anyway, basically, it talks about how they did more and more things to the family, very much like the Berenstain Bears. And guess how it ends? At the end of the second week, both televisions were operating. He put them back in operation. I wanted to once again compare the differences of having a television and not having one. All the good things that had flourished because the absence of a television set now disappeared. Everything reverted back to its old routine. Okay. Let me just read one or two more. These are very interesting. I find them very interesting. Oh, a study was done in Denver. An ad was put in the Denver paper saying, would you like to participate? Be without TV for 2 months, for the whole summer, for 2 months of the summer. And anyway, they had a group of families who did that. And here's some of the things that changed. There were more interaction with the adults. You know, the adults interacted more. More peaceful atmosphere in the home. And under each of these, she lists numerous quotes, which I don't have time to read to you tonight. There's a greater feeling of closeness as a family.
more help by children in the household. You know, doing dishes. They talk while doing dishes, it says here. And both children clean their rooms more thoroughly than usual. More outdoor play, changes in bedtime and meals. The children play together more. More reading, better relations between parents. More activities. All kinds of positive things that happen. And some of these people continued without a TV. And they're in the back a few people who gave up television for good and talked about their very positive experiences and about how that they weren't culturally isolated, how they weren't country bumpkins, as I don't think I am, or my wife is. We keep up with things. We read the newspaper, which I'm not so thrilled about either, but it's very cute. That's another subject. You know, we don't have a TV, but we keep up with things. And also, she dispels another myth, that none of the kids will play with your kids, or your kids will be oddballs because they don't watch TV. Well, that's just not true. Or at least in some of the interviews, it was shown not to be true. That the kids who didn't watch TV were pleasant, you know, were kids who were just kids. And by the weight of their personalities and who they were, made friends just like anybody else. Okay, suggestion for you. Read The Plug-In Drug. This had been a book report tonight. I feel bad about that. I wish I could have given you more stuff. There's not much more stuff written quite like this. Read that book. Secondly, if you have a TV, if you decide, yes, TV is important, here's a few suggestions. Mediate it if you have kids. You have kids, but you don't have a TV, do you? That's right. Very. All right. Power to the people. No. All right. If you have children and a television, mediate it. And I don't even mean say, oh, I know what they're watching, and it's okay. I mean mediate it, administer it. I don't use the word watch anymore with TV. I use the word use. We use TV for one reason or another, generally for escape or relaxation. Be there. They did a test. Mr. Rogers, right? Design. Has everybody here seen at least one Mr. Rogers? It's a fun program. I like it. We're supposed to enhance imagination. All right? They had four groups of kids. One group of kids who just were left to play on their own. One group of kids who watched Mr. Rogers by themselves. A third group of kids who watched Mr. Rogers and also had an adult, interpreting and talking back and forth. And a fourth group of kids who just had an adult, you know, encouraging them to play various things. Which group of kids played the most imaginative? I'm almost done here. The kids with only the adult, no TV. All right? They were the most imaginative, the most into it. Second most imaginative group were the kids who had Mr. Rogers and an adult. All right? The third most were the kids by themselves, and the fourth most were just the TV. All right? The point is, mediate the television. Be there. Interact. And now we get a little bit of content. If a commercial comes on that you know is fake, or you know is half-truth, say, wait a minute. That's strange. Mediate. You know, be involved in the TV process with your kid. Second, limit the usage. This book is filled with all kinds of people who say, well, you know, we only watch, allow the kids 1 hour a day. Or for school-age kids, no TV during the week, or maybe 2 hours on the weekends. Again, that's with good results. See, I'm not saying throw it out necessarily, although that's obviously the choice I personally prefer. But what I'm saying to you is, it's a drug. Use it carefully. Pastors-to-be, or counselors-to-be, a lady comes up to you and says, oh, I just don't know what's wrong with Johnny. He just runs like crazy. I can't control him. He's hyper. How much TV does he watch? That could be a question. Well, golly, he watches 5 hours a day. That kid might be on a drug. You could suggest, well, why don't you take him off of it a little bit or completely? All right? Be involved with the kids. Read to them. Play with them. Put the television in a difficult place. Our vicarage vicarage last year came equipped with a TV. I was, in retrospect, I'm glad we had it just so I can see what it was like having a four-year-old child and a TV. And we used it too much. I mean, I read the book in the middle of the year. I wish I'd read it earlier in the year. But anyway, it was a good learning experience for me. We had it in the back room. There were no easy chairs. It wasn't the focal point of the living room. You know, it was hard to get at. Marie Wynn and her family owns a television. It's a small black and white that they keep in the closet. I said to myself, when our youngest kid gets six, then I might think about getting a TV. And we probably have a set, put it in the closet, and, you know, a moon landing or an inauguration or a Thanksgiving Day parade or, you know, even a good Disney movie on a Sunday night. Then we pull it out, you know, put it away. So don't make it easy to use. make it there, but not easy. Any other suggestions? Another suggestion, of course, is to completely get rid of it. One final comment, and then I'll be done. Do not let television rob parents to be, don't let TV rob you of the precious, precious gift that God gives you as parents, the gift of helping raise children. I like to think of parenting as activating children. God calls us to be activators, to activate, you know, kids to become active themselves. That gets into my biblical basis a bit. Don't let TV rob you of that. It's a precious gift that you have, and you future pastors, it's a precious gift that you can encourage and extol and demonstrate to the families in your parish. See? You know, that's a message you can give to them too. So don't let TV rob you of your precious gift. The Berenstain Bears, that was, maybe I just should have read that and said nothing more. That illustrated that. You know, the parents became involved. They enjoyed, they were a part of their kids. All right. Oh, one more thing. Over here, there's some bibliographies, which includes the Wynn book and a bunch of others. Also, and go ahead and take one. And if there's not enough, I have a, you can sign up if you're interested. I wrote a paper for a class, and it's a typical sort of paper that a person might write in his final quarter at school, not wonderfully proofread, not polished. You know, and I will polish it later. But if you'd like to see an unpolished paper, you'd like either a small version, which means reduced on the machine. That's what small means. Or if you don't like to read small things, you want big ones, you can check here. If you'd like me to copy Wynn's introduction or the introduction into her family life chapter in these books, I can do that. That's for the cost. And if you didn't get a bibliography and want one, then go ahead and put a check here. And anyway, here's an envelope if you want to put a couple of nickels or quarters. I have a cut. So, this is up here if you're interested. Are there any questions? Or any thoughts? Or any? I told Nathan maybe I'll come home with tomatoes and stuff all over me. I don't know. One will be two in June. And that's just, she kind of looks, kind of, well, any kid can get involved in TV. But two and a half, three is when you really, it's a critical age. Generally when kids really get hooked into it. And our other, and Aaron is 4 and a half, so it'll be 5 in September.
Our mother tells a story of when our family was first starting out, we're back in 1949, and we didn't have a TV, or our family didn't have a TV, and my older brother and sister were going over to our neighbor's house to watch TV, and that's why they bought a TV in the first place, because the kids were gaming and so forth.
You did what for 4 years?
I didn't have TV for 4 years.
And you say your life improved a lot?
I say it changed. Yeah, it changed good.
Okay.
But I also think that I could have tried to work it a little bit and tried to be in my life in an educational way. I think there are many great shows on TV. They'd be very selective. But I just don't see it throwing it out as a final solution.
Okay. And I would say, and you are an adult talking, and I'm saying that prohibition is not the answer to alcohol problems, you know, either. As a parent with children in the house, and Nita said I could even mention this, she is prone. If the TV is there, she'll turn around. She will watch too much. She'll admit that. She could easily become an addict. And so for us, it's the best solution not to have one. And for us, it is progressive. But as an adult, so a guy in the class said, why, my wife and I watched a National Geographic special the other night, and we talked about it afterwards, and that is a unique use of television. And what you're talking about is a unique use of television, and a good use, you know? What the reports show is that the majority of this country, most people do not use it in that way. You know, and so as pastors, well, that's another thing in terms of our preaching and teaching. I'm not even sure of the implications there, but I know that that's got to change it somehow.
Children, but you're talking older children, they also can be pre-adolescent. mm-hmm. not have that childhood tax-free access.
Yeah, okay, sure. That's, yeah, whatever works.
Over on Vickers, you saw that a lot of adults don't know how to interact when company comes without a TV. And one of our staff was to visit every member of the congregation, and there were some parents of the visitors that would not turn off the television. And we'd walk in, and we'd see visitors coming to sit down for a while, and I left the TV on. Sometimes we had to ask them to turn it down a little bit, but even when you're trying to visit, it's hard to do.
What you say is possible and true and right, and I'm agreeing with you wholeheartedly. You know, we shouldn't throw away this wonderful piece of technology. Unfortunately, because of its nature, what she says is, I think, more the case. It's so pervasive. You know, it's like the alcoholic who needs a drink to feel normal. You know, I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I'm saying, keep it, you know.
The other thing is, from your angle, a really sad thing that's happening in our society is that the sale of TVs is up. TVs are selling more now than they ever have. With the invasion of the MPS stereo decoding and the high-resolution TVs, I think that this lady, or the whole movement, because I agree with you in a lot of things, but there's kind of a gray area. But it's almost like this stuff is almost too late. I mean, nothing is ever too late, of course. I mean, because I've got a lot of different attitudes about it now than I did now and a half ago. But the society itself is in really a bad situation right now because TV is becoming more attractive, you know, and it's all related to kids who are in poor health now. Kids are out of shape. Big study on all the kids are overweight now, and that's all because of TV, home computers. Your VCR is the whole nine yards.
What do you do with them TV watching?
You know, instead of playing Captain the Flag, you know, getting all their energy out there, building calories, eating candy bars and watching TV. But there's no, I mean, there needs to be about 30 people like this woman.
Right.
You know, because there's definitely a need for some sort of moderation, but it's not on the horizon, I don't think.
You're right. There's a couple of reactions. One, you know, I get real scared for Western society. You know, when I read this, and part of that is maybe not very rational, or you may say, well, we're changing. So, that's why I get scared for Western society, and I worry. Secondly, you know, you're right, it is here to stay, and you know, how can we work with it? You know, how can we deal? So, she talks about, one thing I need to mention, watching television as your brain is developing. You're familiar with left and right hemisphere, right? Are you familiar? Left hemisphere is more organized kind of thinking, engineer, you know, and logical and rational. Right hemisphere is more affective, songs, feeling oriented. Neither one is good or bad. Okay. That differentiation is an adult developed brain. Children don't have that differentiation yet. It's still developing. She suggests that that a lot of television watching in early childhood and developmental years actually changes the physiology of brain development. And she believes that we are becoming, that our society is becoming more right hemisphere oriented, more feeling oriented, more affective oriented. Now that it, for instance, something like the New Age movement. You know, and I wonder, so what are the older, so New Age type of thinking has been around for a long time, but as a popular movement, not so. What age, you know, I look at 40-year-olds as kind of the leaders of the New Age movement. You know, 40-year-olds are people who would have been at the beginning of the TV. I don't know if that's a good comparison. But anyway, so why don't we teach an objective gospel to a more subjective audience? I don't know an answer, but that's right. You've got to consider it. In our first 2 years of marriage, we borrowed a TV once to watch the final episode of the match. And, but other than that, the TV was never in our apartment. Yes, thanks. He was a strong man, you know, or you know, even Spider-Man, so bit by radioactive spider, still, you know, he's still kind of personal, but, you know, he-man, you know what I mean? Yeah, so, okay. Any other thoughts?
Just one thing I noticed on Pickery was that how, you know, in Christian church, where, you know, where we should have, our relationship should be our forte, you know, ministers of reconciliation and all that, how I was surprised how often in youth group the pattern had already been set, that what we do when we get together is watch something. No real interaction in Christian context. There was much more, we had much more to watch something, and no real relating to it.
Yes.
And in fact, for any long time, as long as we got determined here, we're converted to what we do through television. If we don't use television, I think it's an advantage of the tool we're really using for. And I really think that, put our head in the sand and say, I'll be seeing you in the office of our life. I really don't think we're being chosen.
Really?
I think it's going to be harder than your decision. I think your decision is good. And maybe it has to do with the person that made the person. I would want to start with the type of influence in my life. I talked to one woman who was considering one important thing. And she came and told me my nature is evil. The tool of faith. And I said, you show me that in Scripture. Scripture says the word of God is able to change the person's life. And I wouldn't prevent the feeding of those two lives. And I said, by saying that, you're actually denying the word of God in certain context. So I would have cautioned that. It's so easy to go off to anyone. I know I've been there, seen that, watched it, not really seen it.
Yeah, I would say that the person who's converted by TV or that the word of God that successfully gets through TV is the exception. It's possible. God is what God uses all. Amazing things, including me. I mean, amazing. You know? But the fact that he's able to use TV, I think, is even more amazing. And then you can, we hang around and talk about this today.
One comment on the video, of the strong push in the video and of instructional TV and just entertainment type TV is that there, a lot of production companies are putting spots in stuff that they for discussion, and then they'll come to come some ideas for topics for discussion. I've had a lot of evangelism takes. And it's kind of a trend towards everything. You know, even I saw a National Geographic video here recently where it stopped and it listed, you know, when you say you can't stop and go back, it was like a travel tour and it stopped at the point and for you could freeze it and it would go back over all the places you just finished.
Yeah.
So that is where things are going. So I'm real pro video, that's my big and video and it's a great medium that I've seen used in some positive ways. Maybe the receiver can be a great tool by a video, you know, not so much as running the TV, but some
computer, VCR, and I said, oh, Ron Bruce, Married to Family, Married to Richmond, pre-miracle stuff. And it's a video game. You see this couple interact, and then it stops. Stop the game, and then you do some talking about them. And then take again, and a little thing vignette. But in this book, and the way I see it, it's 3 seconds still. Thank you for coming very much. Thank you.